Blog Talk Radio.
Destination Paranormal Radio. I am Marty Seibel, your host, and I'm joined with
Dawn Rogers.
Brandon
and
Johnson.
Our co-host.
Brandon.
Hello, do we have Michael with us?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay. How's everybody doing?
Pretty good.
Doing good.
Pretty good. Everybody have a good 4th of July?
Oh, yeah.
Not bad.
Not bad? What'd you guys do?
I didn't do
not
much of anything.
Brandon?
I sat at home and went to a friend's house for a little while and then came back home and got ready for work today.
Work? Yuck.
Yeah.
How about you, Brandon? What have you been up to? What'd you do for the 4th?
Just spent the day down my grandmother's, all the family together, and then did the tour in the evening.
Cool. Yeah, did you enjoy that? You're talking about the Ghost of Stanton ghost tour, walking ghost tour, huh?
It was good.
You're the best in the valley. I had a very quiet 4th of July. I did not do a whole lot. Sat around the house, watched the fireworks later that evening. Watched a little television, just pretty much chilled, took it easy. Pretty good weekend, though. Ready for work tomorrow. Yuck.
Yuck.
Right.
That's a big yuck.
Yuck.
Well, I've been keeping up, too, because I'm excited, too, because Shark Week starts this week, I believe. I believe it starts tonight. Is that correct?
Yes, sir, it does.
Well, according to the news, Shark Week's been going on for a while.
Yeah.
That's true,
Yes, it has. What do we have now? Is it 10 attacks in, what, a little under 3 weeks?
It's something close to that, yeah.
I think that's just North Carolina and South Carolina, right?
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
Now, I've noticed a few of those beaches I've been to, like the Isle of Palms, Avon, and a few of those others I have been to. And I'll probably go again. I just don't know how far I will go out in the water, if I do go out in the water.
You go in the water, shark in the water.
Yeah, it's been bad. There's been a lot of attacks lately.
Well,
just
to start it off
like
and kick it off, we pulled out Jaws last night and watched it just to kick off the week, just to kind of get revved up with it. But it's all good. I'm very excited about tonight's show. We're actually talking about Gettysburg, which is one of my favorite locations to go to. And I know with you all, as with myself, a big interest in the Civil War, and particularly the Battle of Gettysburg. Just so much had happened there, and to be such a horrific, tremendous battle, it has really piqued my interest for a long, long time. And I've actually been able to visit the battlefield quite often ever since I was a young child. and even more so for about the last 15 years, being involved with the paranormal, and love and history as well. And I know you guys go there quite a bit. Dawn, I believe, now when you went up 2014, was that your first visit up to the battlefield?
Yes. Yes, it was. Yeah, that was the first time I had been out there, period. So it was a neat experience, but first time.
First time. It's a lot of area to cover, too, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, it was way more than I thought it would be. I didn't realize it was so spaced out like it is.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Tremendous amount of area to cover. And
just
really, what can you say, the greatest battle ever fought on North American soil. And I know, Brandon, I know you go up there quite a bit. Michael, I know you have. You and I have been up there several times. I generally get up there 4 to 5 times a year, although I haven't so much this year. But love going up there. Love the battlefield, just the scenery, taking photographs. It doesn't always have to be something paranormal that I'm doing. Just really enjoy being up there. So we have a lot to talk about with that tonight. So I'm always real excited about that. As I said, I love Gettysburg. I'm going to move into, I do have some announcements as far as with the group and what's going on. Of course, you guys know we have Waverly Hills Sanatorium coming up July the 27th that we'll be investigating. And I know everybody's pumped about that, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a fairly small team for we're going to have about 2 people per floor, 5 floors there. A lot of area to cover, and our second time out to Louisville to investigate Waverly Hills. Just a great location, and I have no doubt that we'll have a good time.
Yeah, I'm excited.
And of course, we have two. We have coming up the end of August, the Lizzie Borden House up in Fall River, Massachusetts. That is August the 28th. And then September the 5th, we'll be just outside of Philadelphia at Pennhurst Asylum. And I've never had a chance to visit Pennhurst. Very excited about that. That'll be a first time for me.
Yeah, me too.
Same here.
Yeah.
You guys ready?
I've been wanting to go there for a while.
It's going to happen. we have some things going on with the tours, too. Full swing with them. And getting ready for our fall season. Of course, we have our downtown historic tour that's going on right now, and we'll continue until Halloween. But very excited to work out the details and announce that we are offering a tour in October with Stanton Parks and Recreation that'll be in Gypsy Hill Park. And it'll feature a lot of the ghost stories of the town, some stops, as well as history and legends. And it's entitled Haunts of the Queen City. And that'll be every Friday and Saturday evening at 7 p.m. in Gypsy Hill Park. And very excited about that. The park, of course, a beautiful location.
Yeah, and a good time of year for it.
Couldn't be better. Couldn't be better. So, all right. Well, Brandon, I'm going to put you on the spot now to update us with news and notes. So if you want to take it away, amigo.
I can do that. Well, guys, I have one really good article for you, and it's been out for a couple of days, so some have heard and some have not heard. Now, when you head into a location, any location, you know, there's always that theory of what you're going to find. Well, you're thinking, what are you going to find paranormal-wise? Well, that's not the case for a couple ghost hunters that were exploring the former, I want to say it's Coon Memorial State Hospital on Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard in Vicksburg when they stumbled across a body of a dead woman. The paranormal enthusiasts left immediately and reported when they found the body to the Warren County Sheriff's Office. Appears the lady was an elderly woman in her late 60s with trauma to the head and a body in Atlanta, Jackson to be processed. According to the police, the body was found by the ghost hunters just after 7 p.m. on the 28th of June. The body was transferred to the county coroner's office in Warren County. They didn't release the name of the woman, but they confirmed her death was a homicide. So you can go ahead and assume that'll probably add to the paranormal activity in the location. So they're in the process of trying to identify her, and perhaps that will happen sometime in the upcoming week. They cannot say that the body found in the hospital is hers, but the body happens to be that of a female. Now, they're thinking it's a lady that went missing a while back, but they cannot determine that. But apparently the ghost hunters were so shook up, one actually left all of their equipment inside of the location, and it's estimated that she will not return to pick it up. It's estimated that the equipment is roughly about $600 worth of equipment. So if anybody is interested in free paranormal equipment, you can go down to wherever this place is, the Memorial State Hospital in Vicksburg, and they'll hook you up right away.
Wow.
Can you imagine that, though? I mean, usually when you're investigating in the dark, you stumble over, let's say, a coffee table, you stumble over something on the floor. Oh, look, it's a dead body.
Yeah, that's way above the norm. Way above the norm.
Yeah.
It left the equipment. Left the equipment. Correct?
Everything apparently was at a standstill. They found the body, and then she took off running, and then the rest of the group apparently called the police. But I'm thinking here, what kind of group is that to leave somebody's equipment? Some free guys,
yeah.
If I haul out of a location, please grab my stuff.
Yeah.
Wow. Now, do they know the cause of death with the individual?
No, they have not released that. They're waiting for a full toxicology report. But they have determined that it was, in fact, a homicide. Now, they're trying to figure out if that was in case a lady that was reported missing for about 2 weeks before they found the body, but they're not able to confirm that yet. So
they're not able to confirm her identification?
Not yet. Not yet.
Not yet. Wow.
But that's what I got for you today.
That has to be a first.
I would say probably... probably is, yeah.
Well, I guess if you had to get rid of a body, I mean, a haunted location. But then again, with the uprise in paranormal and investigations and whatnot, everybody getting into paranormal investigations, maybe they should know that's not really a great spot to dump something now.
Mm.
Yeah, perhaps not. that just blows my mind. I can't imagine if we ran across something like that.
Yeah.
So last week you had paranormal prostitutes, and this week you had a homicide. So just imagine what possibly next week or next time we have this show will have in store for you.
Yeah, cool. I can't wait.
Oh, yeah.
I can't. I want that.
The moral of the story is don't leave the equipment.
Exactly.
Wow. That's something. Well, anyways, on that note, we're going to go to a commercial real quick. We'll come back, and we'll get into some stuff about Gettysburg. Sound good, everybody?
All right.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
Here we go.
Black Raven Paranormal's first DVD is now available for purchase. Join the team as they head to Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, site of the bloodiest battle of the American Civil War, as they investigate the Farnsworth House Bed and Breakfast. Go to blackravenparanormal.com to get your copy today. Thank you.
Okay, we're back. Going to jump right in with Gettysburg. And one thing I'd like to ask all of you, if there is a location on the battlefield that stands out more to you with some kind of historical or any kind of sentimental value or anything that really stands out to you on the battlefield, a particular location. And I'll start with you, Dawn.
Gosh, it was so different all over the place. I don't really know. I know probably over by the rocks at, what is it, Devil's Den? That's probably
right.
The location that stands out the most as far as remembering just for me, just the overall feeling there. And I remember when I was walking around, I actually had two different soldiers coming through that were following me. Not following me, but more like keeping pace, kind of just
right.
to be there to, as like, you know, if I had a question or something like that, assisting basically. And I thought that was really neat because a lot of the other locations was just more of the residual type energy.
Now, were you able
probably
to determine whether, I'm sorry,
go
were
ahead.
You able to determine yep. if they were Union or Confederate?
No, I wasn't able to decipher them because as far as how I was seeing them, it wasn't, their uniforms weren't clear enough. But they were definitely there. They were definitely aware that I was there. So it was different from what I had been picking up most of the morning. And they were there to assist. Like it took me a minute to get them clear.
Yeah, very cool. Devil's Den, it's a very popular location, too, as well on the battlefield. How about you, Michael? Is there a specific area that you like draws you?
I like the Trangor Field myself. I really like that area. And I had a couple experiences over there myself. And like when we did that, like when we go out in the mornings, you and I, that one morning, I had a few experiences over there, and it just, something draws me there. I like that area a lot, and I captured that one EVP there, the one that's on the website.
Yes,
like
and it is a good area.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that area a lot. Yeah, I like Devil's Den because it's one of the well known, but I'll be the black sheep. I like Triangular Field. I like that a lot.
All right. Well, now we're up to Brandon. Hey, Brandon, what say you? What's an area on the battlefield that draws you in?
I have to say I'm torn between two locations, one being the wheat field, just being that, you know, there was accounts saying that the ground was so littered with dead, you literally could walk across the entire wheat field and not touch ground. You know, just the unimaginable amount of death and destruction on the wheat field and areas like that, and the peach orchard and the rose farm. And then that, more paranormal wise, I've gotten some really interesting photos there, some physical encounters from feeling like I've been, like my shoulder was brushed to kind of nudged. Paranormal wise, there, probably as a Civil War fan and historian, definitely in the Virginia Memorial. For being, you know, I couldn't imagine being General Lee and sitting there and watching, you know, his troops march over a mile of open ground and the cannon fire and having to cross a rail fence on Emmitsburg Road, you know. I just couldn't imagine watching that death and destruction, you know. It's really moving.
Right. You're so right. And that is a tremendous location. It is. I'd have to say for me, and it's close into that area, and it's not really paranormally related. It's Pickett's Charge, that whole area of the field. And for me, I have such an interest in the Civil War and so much respect. And one of the things I find so interesting and passionate about it is the amount of bravery that men on both sides showed, particularly when charging a fortified area. You know, and with trench warfare in the Civil War, it really didn't become the norm until really late in the war. So early on and throughout most of the war, a lot of it was open field charging and taking positions. and the amount of bravery in particular that those troops showed, at least coming across Pickett's charge and taking a position that was really, in my opinion, unobtainable. You know, it just really resonates for me. I've been out there several times in the morning, gotten some really wonderful shots of the sunrise, and just a very enjoyable area of the battlefield that I like to hit. But, you know, the whole battlefield, and it's so spread out, and there's so many areas, there's so many wonderful areas to photograph or just visit and learn. And, you know, the thing with Gettysburg, I've been going there for so long, and I learn something new every time I go up there. I learn something new, whether it be about the battle, the men that fought there, something. And I just love that about it. It's fantastic. And what I've done is I've actually taken the liberty. I've looked up some information, some unknown little facts that I thought I'd throw out there with you all in regards to the Battle of Gettysburg and some of the things pertaining to it. I just thought I'd spit them out. If you're ready, I'll go. The first one here is that the 75th reunion, which was in 1938, nearly 1,800 Civil War veterans attended. Their average age at the time was 94. At this reunion, President Franklin D. Roosevelt officially dedicated the Eternal Peace Light Memorial. I was like, wow, 1,800 at the 75th. Wow, that's a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
A lot, it really is. And you think the average age, too, 94, my gosh. Well, I thought that was interesting.
Yeah.
Here's another one. Approximately 50% of the Confederate artillery ammunition turned out to be unfunctional due to poor manufacturing in the South, which obviously had to play a little bit of a effect or difference within the battle, I would think, but did not know that. Another one. It is reported that the Confederate artillery at Gettysburg contained such a mixture of different cannons that it became difficult to supply them with the correct ammunition. Again, something that could have, you know, meant all the difference in the world with the battle. The Union Army had more uniformity in their cannons, and they were better supplied. Obviously, I would think that would make a difference. I find it interesting. The next is, and we talked just touched on this earlier, the original battlefield encompassed about 25 square miles. Today, the battlefield is maintained by the federal government. It's approximately 6,000 acres. There are approximately 32 miles of roadway running in and about the park. Wow.
Yeah,
it was a lot.
Yeah, it was a lot. I was kind of blown away at the size of it all. Like, I don't know. You don't fathom that until you see it.
Yeah, you don't. You really don't. But everything was part of the battlefield, even the town, the direct interior of the town.
Yeah.
Next, here, during the Battle of Gettysburg, it's believed that Confederate General Robert E. Lee had what was known at the time as the Soldier's Trot. today, that would be known as diarrhea. I did know that.
Hey, that was a big thing back in the day, because you look at, you know, a lot of soldiers died from diarrhea. You know, that was a big killer of the war.
Yes, they did. And, you know, I guess that could have played a part, perhaps, in the battle, you know. Just some more interesting things here. It's reported that as Lee was removing his troops from the battlefield on July the 4th, the wagon train of Confederate wounded stretched nearly 17 miles in length. Gosh, I can't even imagine that.
Wow.
I mean, just, yeah, incredible. And I'm sure they left a lot behind. And if
you look
at the amount of casualties there, you take 51,000, you know, dead, wounded, POW, or just missing. It drained the resources for both armies, but particularly the Army of Northern Virginia, because they weren't able to supply or resupply those losses. But, wow, I just can't. 17 miles.
Yeah.
Incredible. And
that's
our
nice.
Last one here. Yeah, it is. And our last one here, when the armies came to Gettysburg, they brought with them over 90,000 horses and mules. By the end of the battle, some roughly 5,000 of them were dead on the battlefield. Later, the dead horses were drugged to areas on the field, and they were burned. It's reported that it took about a week to burn one average pile of dead horses. Gosh.
I couldn't even imagine the smell.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
At least they didn't eat them.
Man.
Yeah. That is
that's crazy.
And it's just,
a week.
Yes. A lot of interesting little unknown tidbits there. And I always think it's cool to pull up different stuff in regards to the battle. And I learn something new all the time. I knew a few, I had heard of a few of those. Some of them I had not, I was not familiar with. But, you know, we all have different viewpoints if you love history. And if you've studied the battle anyway, I know we have some viewpoints of possibly things that could have affected the battle. And I know for me in particular, I often wonder, had Stonewall Jackson been available to the Army of Northern Virginia, if it's possible there would have been a different outcome. Would Culp's Hill have been taken? You know, if that,
yeah,
if that could have been
very
early.
If you would have taken Cemetery Hill within the first day, you know, the Confederate forces easily would have had the high ground. So there legitimately probably would not have been no fight there.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's a big what if. And the other thing for me, too, is very early on, before the battle ever took place, too, is General Longstreet's position on fighting a defensive battle. And I think that possibly, I'm sure it would have been some type of different outcome had that been in place. And then, of course, the last thing is, too, if Jeb Stuart would have been there with his cavalry and been able to give Lee an accurate report of where exactly where the Union Army was. I believe those are three things that could have. But, you know, the story would have, could have, should have, and who knows.
Exactly.
I don't know. I think ammo still plays such a huge role. I mean, a gun is pretty well not worth anything without bullets that make it work. And if half of the ammunition was bad, I mean, you got half the guns then at that point. So I don't know. That's a pretty bad hit.
Yeah, you're right there. It is. The Union definitely had a superior advantage as far as weapons and equipment, ammunition, and that would play a big role too.
Well, the biggest thing, you know, they had, and for the ammo they actually had, you know, aiming was a big thing. Because you think of Pickett's charge, the Confederate cannonade that took place before the actual infantry made the charge. You had a mile of cannons, you know, just straight line, a mile of cannons. You could hear the, you know, 40 miles away, you could hear the cannonade. But with all that smoke, they were literally firing over the lines of the Union forces. The first couple met their mark, but with all that smoke, you couldn't aim. So they were firing way over the Union forces. So that was the biggest thing.
You're right on that.
For at least
an
hour, hour and a half.
We actually have a call in here.
we have. Hey. I think we have Michael Hoddle and Jim Backus in here with us.
Okay.
I believe that's
well,
who it
we
is.
Well, Michael called in here. I'm gonna take his call and see if he has anything to say. I know he's a frequent visitor of Gettysburg. Let me put him on here. Sir Michael Hoddle of Yorkshire, are you there with us?
I am indeed. How are you, Sir Seibel?
I'm good. I am very well. I know you're a big fan of Gettysburg. You've been there multiple times.
I am indeed.
Is there a certain area that resonates with you of the battlefield?
Yeah, I was listening in there to everybody's preference, and, you know, each one of those strikes a chord in me, particularly with as you all went through them, I was thinking of, you know, all the places I've been to. And Pickett's Charge certainly is a kind of what you touched on a little bit, just with the thought of looking across that land, knowing from the perspective of a commander and someone who is engaged in the battle. One, being able to put your men into battle and know what's about to happen. And two, having the courage to fight it. That's a big one for me. I think you would certainly agree.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, I don't know if I could have done that. and you have to think, too, marching across that field, the adrenaline, everything, the emotion, and watching your comrades get blown to bits right beside you.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and listening to Brandon, you know, talk about what they were up against, you know, it's widely known that you know, how they the weaponry of the time was much more advanced, clearly, than the tactics. You had the, you know, the cannons, and you had the muskets that could fire longer ranges, but yet we were still using tactics of an older day and in days gone by where it didn't make sense. And that's ultimately what led to a lot of unnecessary deaths. You know, we obviously revised those and then learned from stuff like that, but that has certainly been a look back, knowing what the destruction was largely based upon the technology of the mini ball and so forth like that.
Definitely. Mm-hmm.
Another, what's that?
Certainly, yes.
But probably one of my favorite quietest places. I'll throw in two here. Two of my favorite quietest places would be Colts Hill.
I need to say that
because it doesn't quite get the notoriety that it probably deserves. A lot of places don't. You know, everybody, every place is has a story, and there were many people who had a story. But Culp's Hill saw a lot of fighting, a lot of destructiveness there, and it kind of gets off the beaten path a little bit, you know, not directly connected with what is formally known as the battlefield, but that would be one of them. And the other one would be probably my favorite is the position at the 20th Maine Monument. Just thinking about, you know, being in that position and being told what those men were told, you are the extreme point of this military force. You cannot fail. You cannot let anyone buy you. That in itself is a pretty big to fill, so to speak. And they didn't. So
you're
yeah,
right.
A lot of
you're absolutely right. Mm-hmm. It is. Certainly.
And,
I know.
You got to think about
there several times.
I was going to say this, the volley of fire that went back and forth to the point where it became grueling, and much like Pickett's Charge in other places, but just became that grueling hand-to-hand combat where, you know, when you were forced to that extreme, what are you going to do? And it's just a very that part of the battlefield, I think, for me, is a very serene experience, and always kind of captivates me when I'm there.
Yeah, I would agree. Of course, there are all wonderful locations. Every one of them that you all have mentioned on the battlefield, each of them holds so many different feelings. And I've had a chance, I've been on a lot of places on the battlefield and enjoy all of it, even the hike and in the different spots that we've been to. All of them resonate with me in different ways. But I really enjoy getting out very early, the things with the sunrise, things like that, even the sunset too, and really getting beautiful photographs on there. What we're going to do is we're going to break to commercial real quick. We'll come back. We'll talk a little bit on the paranormal aspect of that. Also, too, if anybody does want to call in and share some information with us, share their experience or just their feelings in general on the battlefield, the call-in number is 646-721-9773. We would love to hear from you. Brandon, you ready to take us to a commercial?
Let's do it.
Let's do it. Thank you, Michael.
Marty. You there?
Well, I would if the server's not actually letting me go to commercial.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, then we'll just keep on going.
We'll just keep going then.
We'll just keep flying. So does anybody have... Won't let you go, huh?
Yeah, unfortunately, so it's reconnecting server. So, let's just keep going.
Okay. So does anybody have a paranormal experience that something has happened to them on the battlefield that resonates with them, something that's, you know, that's unforgettable, so to speak, something that's happened to you or a piece of evidence or something you've captured? I'll start with you, Dawn.
Oh, well, as far as, for me, it's kind of normal. So for that, it's a little different. But, when we were, like I said, over at Ben, the one that got my attention the first gentleman that came through, he, when I rounded the corner, there's like a walk path that goes up and behind and brings you up level with the top of the rocks. And as I was coming around the corner, I heard the whisper, "I'm right here," while I was looking around, you know, and wondering how, in my mind, basically how it went down. And there he was, and I could hear him plain as day. So I'm not a very good clear audience. I don't usually typically hear very well. And so that kind of caught my attention. And it was the first spirit that came through while I was in Gettysburg. So that definitely got my attention, because up until that point, you could just feel so much residual energy. And it's intense, man. I tell you, for being a medium that senses energy at the level that I do, it was intense. When I pulled it, driving down that road coming into Gettysburg like that, I was not expecting it. And it hit me hard. It took me several hours to get my bearings back. So to have that one gentleman come through the way he did, and when he said it, I knew instantly he was talking to me. Like, he knew I was standing there. So that got my attention. I thought that was probably the highlight of my visit.
Now, for that to be that intense and pick that up, do you think that is, you attribute that to the magnitude of the event that occurred there?
Most times, I think it has more to do with the energy of the spirit and not necessarily the location, because the energy of that particular spirit didn't actually feel traumatized. Like a lot of the other energies were. A lot of the residual energy that I pick up is very traumatic, confused, sense of loss. And with that particular energy, it didn't feel that way at all. It was almost kind of like, he did his duty and he carried that respect and responsibility with him even afterwards. And so I think what's different about Gettysburg is not so much what happened then, but what's happening now. You have to keep in mind that there are a number of people that hit Gettysburg every year, day in and day out. And a lot of those people are coming for those deceased individuals. And whether they're looking to communicate with them or not, they're engaging with that energy. And so there's a certain amount of those energies that understands the process of what all these people are doing there. And those are the ones that are going to stand out for people. Like I said, the amount of residual energy is extremely high, but there's a number of spirits scattered across Gettysburg that are aware that people are there to communicate with them and to pay homage to them and to show their respect and catch a photograph with them, you know, and they're there doing that exact same thing. So it's not just the location and what happened there. It's what's happening now.
I find that very interesting, that it is. It's spot on. Michael Hoover, let me go to you real quick. Do we have any questions or any comments in the chat room?
No, not really. I've been chatting back and forth with Jim Backus for a little bit. He's in here. And we have a couple other people in here. We have four other users, Lost, Uper, and a couple others. But
I'd like
that,
to give a shout-out to Jim. Jim Backus was on our show just last week. And he is associated with Hillview Manor. We had a great talk with him and Rochelle Rozo, and he actually has some shows out I'd like to give a shout out to. Odd Talk. Yeah, it was just a great show. And their Hillview Manor program, which is awesome.
Yeah, Odd Talk with Jim and what was the other one? He's got so many. if you go to Odd Talk with Jim, you can find all of his shows. And then they have Hillcon coming up.
I enjoy listening to them. They're very good, and they just did a live stream video show the other night that was very interesting. Enjoyed that quite a bit.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. I watched that. It's pretty cool how they're just sitting around being themselves. That was really cool.
I think it's the Hillview Crew Radio.
And they do have an event coming up, too, like to announce to September the 26th. They have HillCon 2015 from Hillview Manor. It's going to be a great event, a lot of speakers. It's going to cover a variety of topics. If you go to their website and check it out, it's going to be a really neat thing going on in September. I would love to go to that. That is actually my birthday. Anyways, I didn't mean to jump off topic here. I want to get back. So let's go with you, Michael. Is there something up there that has, Michael Hoover, something that's grabbed your attention as a paranormal experience?
Not a lot. I mean, other than, you know, the feeling of somebody following you every once in a while, you know, you get that feeling somebody's watching you, or you hear something following you, or you see something out the corner of your eye, but you're not sure, or... On one occasion, I was walking through Triangular Field, my favorite place, and I heard an actual scream, and I was actually recording. I had my recorder on, and I heard an actual scream, but unfortunately, I didn't capture the scream on my recorder. That was one morning we went out and did an investigation, but I didn't capture it. But that's pretty much really the only thing paranormal besides, like, getting the crazy feelings and...
Right.
Other than, you know, personal stuff. But, I mean, not really a lot of paranormal stuff going on.
Well, what about you, Brandon? Is there anything
that
stuck out that you've had?
I got to say, you know, it doesn't really matter a lot of times where you're at in the battlefield. You're going to feel something. You're going to feel the courage and sacrifice of these men and what they did. As far as paranormal-wise, taking a couple cool pictures, I have what kind of looks like a Indian on the rocks at Devil's Den. That was taken one of my first times up there in 2008. At Cashtown, a photograph I took when the building was empty. It looks like a woman peering out of the window looking down. But I think the weirdest experience ever was me and my dad. Well, me and my mom and my dad always go up there every single year. And my dad, he does not get spooked whatsoever. I mean, he's the kind of guy who walks through a haunted house and nothing. And we were up at the Peace Light Memorial. It was nobody there. It was pushing 9 o'clock, and it's just eerie by itself, just that one single flame in the middle of the darkness. And me and him both saw come from behind the actual monument itself, two red glowing embers, and it just kind of came around and just kind of came kind of in our general direction. Now, whatever it may have been, whether it could have been, you know, anything from the flames, but it was bright, and it scared the living hell out of me and my dad. And to see my dad run away, that's scary. But that was probably the weirdest thing that's ever happened. And, you know, to this day, I can't explain it, and neither can he. So.
Now, how old were you when this happened?
19, 20. This was recently, like in 2010, okay. So it was not too long ago.
Wow. Yeah, that's a pretty cool experience. I, for the most part, I've said I don't have a lot of personal experiences, and I've not had many at Gettysburg. I have had the opportunity and been very lucky to get some pretty good EVPs up there, in regards, especially with the Farnsworth House, which, you know, is located right in the heart of Gettysburg, particularly with the little boy named Jeremy up there who supposedly died in the house. I think he was about 6 or 7 years old. I've been able to capture him on audio, and very clearly, too. Didn't know it at the time, didn't know until I got home, and then discovered it was on my recorder. But that, for me, really, really sticks out. Of course, too, our investigation of the Farnsworth House back in 2014, some of the conversation via the spirit box that we had up in the attic, you and I, Dawn, when we were trying to contact a Confederate soldier up there named Walter, was very, very interesting for me. But while we got, and I know we have Michael Hoddle still in here, Michael, is there anything in Gettysburg at, paranormally that has stuck out to you, or a piece of evidence or something that you've had captured or had happen?
Well, like you just said, the one of the things that really excited me about Gettysburg was that EVP that you talked about with Jeremy. That, you know, that's one of the holy grails that you, as far as audio goes, that you hope you can someday get. So that one, as far as your capture, was really awesome. I don't know, if going back to what Dawn spoke about with the paranormal or with the residual energies, I kind of performed my own little experiment, but I didn't really know I was doing it until after the fact. And I think each and every one of you will fully grasp what I'm talking about. I took my girlfriend up there for our first anniversary, and I kind of covered her eyes every time we would pass a sign. She had no idea where we were going, and the place itself was very significant for her because of her father who had passed away and his love of Gettysburg and the Civil War. And she had always wanted to go, but she had never been able to. She just never gotten there yet. So we went up there, and like I said, I covered her eyes the whole way, and when we broke that threshold, and I think all of you know that feeling when you get in the area, there is just that overwhelming just energy that is kind of like, I think Dawn described it best. It's, you know, just a confused, it's just there. Marty, you and I are both paranormal bricks when it comes to that stuff, but you can feel it. Anybody that goes there, if you can't feel it, then, you know, you're a cinder block, I guess. But we pulled up, and she described it as we were coming in. She was, and I pulled over on the side of the road, and at that first little sign, it just says the borough of Gettysburg. And, you know, of course, other things took hold at that time. You know, oh, my God, thank you, know, and so forth. But that in itself, you know, that tells you something. Never had great luck as far as capturing anything on the battlefield. Did have one experience at Culp's Hill one time. It was a, you know, chasing daylight type investigation. I was up there by myself pushing the hours to be out of there. And I was had, you know, multiple recorders set up and thought and captured what I believed to be footprints or footsteps running down the trail. It startled me so bad that I didn't run out of there without my equipment, but I packed up pretty quickly, and I was, you know, I engaged it at first. I was like, yeah, hello? You want to talk? Okay. Well, it's getting dark. I need to go. So, never had much luck on the battlefield, and it's I think it's a hard thing to do, obviously, because of the ability not to. You can't control it as far as solid evidence goes. I think everybody always wonders when you hear that little gunshot off in the distance and musket fire, what are you really hearing?
Right.
So I did have, actually, now I think about it, I did have an experience, and you probably remember me telling you this, it was after my very first investigation ever at Fort Mifflin, and the bug bit me, and I was looking for a place to go. And I went to had the opportunity to go to the Tilly Pierce house one night, and I was the only one in the house. and went up there, and they gave me full rein to do whatever I wanted to do. I had every room available to me, and still have this audio clip somewhere. I don't know if you remember the story, Marty. I'd walked down the hallway. I'd hit each room, kind of working my way down, and I sat in a chair at the end of the hallway. And you know how when you – it was kind of a cushier type chair that would push air out of it and kind of make that sound when you would, you know, obviously sit in a chair and it would make that sound. But the time frame didn't add up right. And it's kind of funny because it almost sounds like I sat on something because I sit in the chair, you hear my body settle, and then you hear this and it was very odd. There was no other sounds going on at the time. And, you know, as far as audio, that's probably the extent of anything I've ever captured there. So
I do remember that clip. And
yep.
I do. And, you know, you were very lucky with that situation. The Tilly Pierce House, a great place, and to go in there and have it and then have the whole thing to yourself by chance, pretty cool. I had the same situation 1 year with the Fairfield Inn in Fairfield, Pennsylvania, just down from Gettysburg, and had the whole place to myself, and got a really good EVP in there that night. But yeah, cool place. I like a Tilly Pierce House. But cool experiences, everybody.
Indeed.
Cool stuff to share. Hey, Michael Hoover, real quick again, do we have anybody in the chat room? Any questions? Anybody want to call in? If anybody wants to call in real quick, that number is 646-721-9773.
Another chat room looks good.
Good deal. Well, I know as far as investigation-wise, what we've had in Gettysburg in the past, most recently we've done the Farnsworth House. Mm. We've done the Jenny Wade House. We've done the Gettysburg Orphanage. There are some other locations we're looking at to hit in the future for 2016 and beyond. One of those locations, possibly the Cashtown Inn, which was actually the first bed and breakfast I was able to stay at in Gettysburg, or in the area, I should say, not exactly right in Gettysburg, but really enjoyed it. I've stayed there multiple times. I love it, really. Very active area, and I just love the history associated with it, too. But if you guys, let me pose to you, if there was one location in Gettysburg you could investigate, what would it be? And I'll start with you, Dawn. Go right on down, Dawn.
Honestly, I'm not picky. I enjoyed the times that I've gone. Like, if you said this is where we're going, I'm down. I enjoy the entire place. Like I said, now that I know what I'm up against and I can brace myself for that initial energy hit, it's a really cool location to be. It's a really good place to be. So any of those locations within it, I'm interested in.
Excellent. You're a good girl. You're with the team. And it is
I'm
a
down.
Good location.
Yep.
What about you, Michael Hoover?
To me on that one. I mean,
Hoover passes. All right, Brandon.
There's several of them. I mean, all the farms. All right. I'll do all the farms that we can't get to. I'll just say that.
Some of the hospital locations.
Yeah,
like the Daniel Lady
all
farm or something.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that would be high on my bucket list if we could get access to it. What about you, Brandon?
I agree with Dawn 100%. I would investigate the bathroom at Friendly's. It's in Gettysburg. I mean, seriously, don't take that seriously.
Good.
But anyway, the couple places definitely for me, I mean, Cashtown's a given. The Cadore House with just being in the wake of Pickett's Charge. The Spengler Farm, going with Hoover, because that's where the main hospital was right after Pickett's Charge, Daniel Lady Farm. But I'm going to throw y'all a curveball. The one place I would love to be able to be locked in for a couple hours one night would be the Visitor Center and the History Museum. just with all the artifacts, everything in there, something has to be there. And, of course, they caught that image, was it last year or the year before, of that silhouette?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, no doubt.
So
that's a wonderful place to visit. It is. Well, what about you, Michael Hoddle, if you're still on here with us? What would you, if you had an opportunity to investigate something in Gettysburg, what would it be?
I would, I was wondering if anybody was going to steal my idea of a place that I've heard a lot about, the Gettysburg Hotel.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
And I definitely think the hospitals and the farms and the, you know, Daniel Eddy Farm and some of that stuff that Mark Nesbitt has really pioneered and brought out
is
great. But I would love to get into the Gettysburg Hotel. But, like, you know, kind of like dogs, any place and anywhere, because there is no one place. A humorous comment I often hear and was probably may have been uttered out of my mouth the first time I was there is people show up and they say, "Where's the battlefield? You're standing on it, pal. It's everywhere."
Mm-hmm. Yep. You're so right. I'd have to say for myself, it's pretty much the same. Just about anything associated with Gettysburg or in Gettysburg, it really wouldn't matter. I would love to investigate it. Whether it be farms, the Tilly Pierce House, you know, even Saks Bridge, to be able to have that completely to yourself and secure the area if you could. Just anything in and about the battlefield. And actually, we'll be looking into some locations here very soon for the group. But we've got
Did
about a minute and a half
here?
Left.
Hey, Marty.
Yeah, Hoover.
What's that building up on Seminary Ridge where that scene, where they went down in the elevator and that scene from the Civil War
old
operation
dorm.
Scene?
That's the dorm.
That was part of the college, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, that's where I'm – yeah, there you go. That would be a good place.
That would be nice. That would be an excellent spot.
Yeah.
The railroad house, the train depot.
Another location for me would be General Lee's headquarters.
Yeah.
I think that would be wonderful. Well, look, we have about a minute left. I do want to thank everybody for being on the show, or anybody listening. I do want to say in honor Gettysburg. They just had the 152nd reunion of the battle, July the 1st, 2nd, and 3rd. And again, I do want to give out a shout-out to Jim, because I know he was in Gettysburg this weekend. And give a shout out to his shows, Odd Talk and Hillview, as well as the last one. And I'm terrible with names.
I am too. I can't think today.
Sorry, Jim. I'm butchering this. Jim and Zopecast. Jim and Zope show. So I do want to give those a shout out. Sorry, Jim. But I had it all pulled up here on the computer, and I was a hard time navigating through this. But I believe our show has officially ended. But we're still running over, right? Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Do another
so
hour.
This is
with
archives.
Hey, Marty,
I like
to your point, if Jackson was there, I think we wouldn't know where Gettysburg was today. That's my stance on it.
Mm. Well,
the great belief that Jackson would have advised him against it, because that was not the ideal battleground, as history has shown. But
Why, let me ask you real quick your perspective. Why do you feel, or do you think, why do you think Longstreet was not able to convince him of that?
There was, I mean, you know, at the time there was so much political pressure. There was, you know, they were coming off of Chancellorsville victory. There was the pressure in the on the western side with Vicksburg that Vicksburg was going to fall. and Lee felt they had to move into Maryland to take that. They had to have another big win in the North, or they had to have a big win in the North to convince that foreign power to endorse the Confederacy to be a legitimate government. And that's why what was the part of your question? Kind of slipped my mind there.
Why do you feel Longstreet was unable to convince Lee?
And because
not
Lee,
to take a defensive
he knew,
stand.
He knew what he had to do. He had to get that victory. And it was, they had no intentions of fighting there. You know how the war broke out, kind of just haphazardly. Oh, hey, there's the bad guy. Let's start shooting.
Sure.
And then it escalated because Stuart was out of position and the troops kept converging on this town. And then eventually they were going for BC and Baltimore. They were kind of swinging up and around, which I feel confident that Lee would have probably done. They were, there was a great fear that was going to happen. And it was Gettysburg was a pivotal point that kind of shut it all down because Lee wasn't prepared to fight there. And that's why I think Jackson would have intervened and said, no, we can't do it here. And Longstreet, I don't know. He kind of gets
you,
a bad
you think
rap.
Jackson would have, so you think Jackson would have had more input, so to speak?
I think he would have advised him. He knew the capability of the Army was strong. They were coming off of momentum, and they had to act. I think he would have convinced him, we can fight, but not here and not on this day. We're not prepared for it. And Lee kind of got, I think he went a little, I don't know if I want to use the word bullheaded, but he wasn't really listening to some of the input from his commanders. That's why Longstreet, he gets bashed at times for hesitating on his actions. He was told to do something, he didn't. And that was his, he was more of a passive aggressive, where I think Stonewall will tell you like it is. He'll tell you, but he'll do whatever you tell him to do also.
Right.
So, and Longstreet was more of a, look, I don't think this is a good idea, and I'm kind of sort of not going to do it either. So.
That's an interesting point. It really is.
And, we look at Gettysburg, which is interesting. I've been so focused on that Eastern campaign, but on the Western side, Vicksburg fell on July 4th, and that was the nail in the coffin, as it were, for the Confederacy. Two great defeats on each side, and the Army was split on the east or on the west, and Lee's men walked back very defeated and would never come back to the north. So,
yeah, you're right. It was the turning point, and all downhill from there.
Yeah. And I think that's why he put so much effort into Pickett's Charge, and why that's, like we talked about the great struggle that happened there for every reason. I think every man who walked across that field knew this is a now or never type scenario. I think they knew. I think they knew that it's either going to happen now or it isn't going to happen. And back then it was a different breed of individual than we have today that would be willing to do that.
You're so right. You're so right.
Definitely.
Well, is there anything else anybody else would like to add into the discussion before we...
I'll go along with that real quick. We've agreed, Stonewall was there. He would have had, the pull, or he would have the brain and know about being with topography, know how to take a location. Couple of things is going into the campaign, Longstreet was under the impression that they were going to fight a defensive war, a defensive campaign into the North. So I guess it really did take him by surprise when he wanted to press on to a full engagement. But however, I think one of the biggest factors came on the second day when you had Sickles moved his troops and you have the advance of William Barksdale. Barksdale made his attack so late in the afternoon, he basically lost the element of surprise, and not having Jeb Stuart arrive on the battlefield till late into the second day, scouting the troops and hit the position, Barksdale had to find an alternative route, which cost countless time, and they were told to hold your position, and it was till what, I think, 4 in the afternoon until he was unleashed. I mean, there you lost your element of surprise. They know you're coming, so they have time to reinforce their, you know, their troops.
Right.
Yeah, there were a lot of elements that went wrong that day, and you have to kind of examine what even brought you there to begin with. And like you said, Marty, you can what if it to death, but...
Sure. Well, do any of you all go by or feel, and I've seen this or come across it, where there are those that believe the gains of the first 2 days were actually did more harm to the Army of Northern Virginia, that they weren't enough, or they used too much expenditures to accomplish what they did, and therefore there was the end result. Do any of you all prescribe to that theory? Actually fooled into thinking they were much further along in the campaign, the battle, and ahead.
Well, I think they were overconfident. Yeah, absolutely.
Given the situation, though, I mean, wouldn't you have to be? I mean, there's a reason that they were able to do what they were doing. Like, we sit here, we talk about how they walked through these places where I know I wouldn't, and you guys said the same thing, you wouldn't. I mean, part of that is the ego stroking that the people in charge were doing to get them motivated to do what needed to be done. You know, trying to make them overly confident it's the same thing that you see in sports, which is totally off base to relate them to, but you pick them up to the point where they're able to do what needs to be done, in hopes that they'll pull through. I think being overly confident was probably has to do with, how fast forward they went. But at the same time, I mean, if they weren't that way, they wouldn't have gained any ground at all.
And yeah, and I'll go with that, because you look at the Wilderness campaign, you know, Lee divided his already smaller forces and conquered. And so, yeah, if I was a soldier in the Army of Northern Virginia marching into Gettysburg, I would have a huge chip on my shoulder, you know, falling under the direction of Robert E. Lee. But I think the first days of fighting, it was equal kind of difficulty for the Army of the Potomac in Northern Virginia, because you look at, you know, the killing of Reynolds, the capture of Archer, you know, the Dawes and the railroad cut, you know, and then the retreating forces going through town up to Cemetery Hill. I mean, really, the first day could be considered a stalemate, and it could have actually been turned into a defensive campaign after the first day. You know, like Longstreet said, we're not trying to retreat, we're trying to redeploy.
Yep.
So there's many ways you can look at it. I mean, it's like looking at a globe. You can spin it around, look at it from every which way direction, and find fault everywhere you look. But, you know, it's one of those, you know, battles where it's almost transparent how much you can see through it.
Yeah, you're right.
And a lot of people don't realize that how many times, you know, Meade was brand new to the command of the military at that time. And you have him, this was his big first hurrah, having just been appointed over the forces, and he walked in and basically was the first person to be able to outguess Robert E. Lee and what he was going to do. And Lee was prepared to draw them into a fourth day, actually, but Meade didn't fall for it. That's why,
a good point.
You know, when you look back to say, you know, those troops came up there, they were coming up there for the Northern invasion and to try to bring some of that heat off of Vicksburg. But they were also battle-worn, tired, hungry, and we're looking, you know, there's a lot of literature about them coming up there to resupply, basically, because Virginia had been raided so badly. And I think they kind of, boys, we're here. We got to fight or else, you know, this is probably, it's probably it for us. It's either this and on to Washington or nothing. Absolutely, they had to be confident.
Yeah, most definitely. And like you said, you're at that point, you know, Lee's looking for the knockout to really to end it.
There was one speech, there was one quote. I don't know if you guys saw the History Channel where it talked about the Battle of Gettysburg, the recent documentary. I forget the dude's name, but he says, Robert E. Lee is not there to win a battle. He's there to win the war. So that pretty much sums up his entire invasion into the North.
I remember hearing that. I've heard that somewhere. I do.
I've heard that.
Well. Well, guys, I guess we're going to put a wrap on it. I've enjoyed talking with everybody. It's been fun. I enjoyed having you on, Michael, and chat with us. It's been fun.
Hey,
Gettysburg.
Guess what topic we didn't touch on at all?
What's that?
You didn't go there. The flag issue.
Well, it just crossed my mind. It did, and yeah. I didn't go there.
That's a whole 2-hour special.
That would be a 2-hour special. But, I'm still reading enough about it on Facebook. I get to read everybody's comments and thoughts and opinions on it. Of course, you know, I know we all have thoughts on it. Yeah, you're right. It would take about a 2 to 3 hour show.
Yeah, we would definitely have a lot more call-ins on that show.
Yeah, we would. And then, you know, we'd have to get into the Dukes of Hazzard and all that.
Oh, God.
Does anybody watch that show? Or anybody ever watched it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You
watch
too?
It every Saturday
yeah.
morning.
Yep, you all too.
Right. Did anybody see the remake, the movie?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
It's funny.
I liked it.
I liked it, too.
You'll be happy to
know, I used to turn it over and watch the Dukes of Hazzard in the evenings, but can't do that anymore.
No, you can't. Not anymore.
I'm not going to get into that right now. Like, we'll be on here another hour, but...
Yeah.
Marty, you'll be happy to know that there is a Confederate flag rally at our local Walmarts as we speak.
Walmart. Is it really?
Really? Which Walmart?
Yep. What stock?
You're kidding.
Oh, dear Lord.
And I think it's WHSV news coverage was actually there. I saw a picture of a guy with a TV cam and a microphone on Facebook. So.
Oh, dear God in heaven.
Wow.
People of Walmart.
Yeah, the Walmarts. God bless them.
Break out the old Bonnie Blue and go down.
Well, with that, we're gonna shut it down. Thanks, everybody. And tune in to our next show, which will be the 19th, I believe, of July, unless you guys do a show next Sunday, the 12th. I'm going to be out of town, so I'll leave it up to you all. With that, we'll depart. It's been fun, everybody.
All right.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah, thank you.
Good night.
Bye.
You stay
bye.